Our medical team, even at West Ham and Forest, we're a big group. And when I say medical team, that's inclusive of doctors, inclusive of paramedics, inclusive of physios, inclusive of sports therapists, SNC coaches, nutritionists, psychologists. Especially if it's a head injury, you need more than two people to help you with it. So what I tell any of the opponent physios who've never worked with me, I just say to them, if you see me running on, and if you see me down with the player for more than 10 seconds, don't even wait for me to signal you, just run. So it's quite important to, you know, be on high alert at all times when you see a neck injury or a head injury. Just assume that, you know, you have to clear them for concussion. And as much as I love watching football, you know, every time there's a game taking place, I'm like ready in my head. You're always on high alert. You know, when I run the pitch, I only get 2 minutes to figure out what's going on. Sometimes if a player is desperate to get back into the game or doesn't want to stay out for a couple of weeks, it is possible that he can just come and tell you, I'm fine. And then what do you do?
Hey everyone, welcome back to an all new episode of All About Sports, the podcast, a weekly sports podcast for the fans, by the fans. Joining me today is Rishabh.
Hey everyone.
And I'm Mazhar. But today we have another guest. The guests keep coming and we're absolutely loving these segments. So today we have, and this is a first for us, we have a special sports physiotherapist on board. Hiba, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
Hi guys, doing really well. Thank you.
So a bit about Hiba. So Hiba Ansari, she's come from Bombay, moved to the UK, is working in sports physio, as I mentioned, but she's done a lot to get there. So before that, she moved here to my rival university in a lot of ways, University of Nottingham, did her MSc in sport and exercise medicine, and then has also done a lot of cool internships and a lot of cool work in between, including the Tata Mumbai Marathon. Also, Inside Edge Season 2. Funny enough.
How did you get this information about me?
I have my sources, Hiba. I have my sources. No, but what's crazy is, I know that show can be super cringe, but it's super entertaining. And I loved it, every moment of it. She's also interned at Bucks. So that's the British Universities and Colleges Sport, which is the biggest. It's like the NCAA for the UK in a lot of ways, which, mind you, Loughborough won again, 8,000 points by 2,000 points, beating out Nottingham itself. Then she happened to work at a now Premier League club again after so long, which is an absolute joy to know, Nottingham Forest. She was the academy physio there and has been with West Ham for over a year now. My Stratford club. As the academy physio, and is also now working with Pure Sports Medicine, which is something that she really wanted and was driving towards, as a musculoskeletal specialist physiotherapist. I hope I pronounced that right. So thank you so much, Hiba. I mean, at such a young age, you've achieved so much, and it's a pleasure to have you on board. And let's just get started right away. So my first question is, did you always know you wanted to do sports medicine?
Yeah, 100%. When I took up physiotherapy, which is like back in 2012, obviously we had entrance exams to prepare for. You know, you have done CET as well, the entrance exam. So when I was preparing for that, my parents were kind of pushing me to take up dentistry for some reason. And I was like, why do you want me to like put my hands in like random people's mouths? It's not what I want to do. But I knew that I was more inclined towards combining medical and sports in a way, because I just come from like a background where sports was a big deal. So my condition to my parents was that I want to do physiotherapy in India, but I want to go abroad for my master's in sports medicine. Because even back then when I was taking up or preparing for physiotherapy, I always knew that there would be more scope abroad, you know, just because like there are bigger clubs and bigger different sports and teams. So long story short, I always knew I wanted to specialize in sports medicine. Like, there was no other option for me.
Which is pretty awesome because, you know, people go through a transitionary phase, and also specifically knowing that you want to do sports is such a big deal. Like, I always knew I wanted to work in sport, but I did the typical Indian thing of playing it safe and ended up doing commerce and finance, and then went through that transition to eventually switch over. So it's pretty cool that, you know, you stuck with that and it's clearly bearing fruition now. What schooling or work experience does someone need to be a sports med physio?
Right. So obviously you need your undergrad. So in India, it's 5 years. In the UK, it's a 3-year BSc. So you need to have a bachelor's in physiotherapy to be a physiotherapist first. But obviously, like in the undergrad, you know, you touch a few modules that are on sports therapy, but you wouldn't be addressed as a specialist then because that's a different niche on its own. So the way I went about is I did my undergrad in India, but when I was still studying, I was doing a lot of internships in those 5 years, which were quite sport dominant because I was just trying to make my CV really strong. So where my other friends would go and do like internships in ICUs because they wanted to be ICU or cardiorespiratory specialists, I was very sure that I wanted to do sports, and I thought, why must I wait until, you know, uni ended? So did that and then graduated in India. And then when I first started working in Mumbai, I was very careful with the clinics that I was applying to because, again, like there are a plethora of brilliant private clinics, but I was particularly only, you know, applying to places which had a really good like sports you know, intake of patients. So I got quite lucky with my first full-time clinic because predominantly the patients we were seeing were national level cricketers. So we saw people from the IPL, we saw people from the Ranji Trophy, people from MCA. And this was again like in Bandra and Khar. So as you can imagine, you know, like quite a heavy cricket dominant environment there. So I knew I was going to do masters at some point. But because I knew that it was going to be in a different country, I just wanted to make sure that I had that extra edge because I knew this was going to be a totally different environment for me. So therefore, working back at home for X number of years was, again, a very, very calculated decision that I had made. When I was back in India, I touched, you know, base in cricket, swimming, badminton, tennis, squash, football. So I did a lot of sports. And then I went a bit more niche. I was working with a sports scientist who was predominantly seeing Commonwealth athletes, and he was working more in rifle shooting and archery and like those things. And while I was not really aware of what the principles of those sports are, I still wanted to kind of like dip my toes and get an understanding of the difference between an elite individual sport in comparison to an elite team sport. And then when I thought, after 4 years of working, I was like, you know, I think I've just, you know, done everything that I possibly can learn, like clinically, I'm now ready for the next plunge. That's when I applied for my master's. And then my master's was a very, very intense 1-year sports medicine program. And when I say sports medicine, it means that it was open to physios, it was open to doctors, it was open to sports scientists. So when we graduated from that program, we were sports medicine specialists rather than just sports physiotherapy specialists. Because that course was very comprehensive, you know, it had modules on cardiovascular issues, drugs that are being taken in Olympics, or just anything medicine. Whereas in sports physiotherapy, you would only be seeing the physiotherapy aspect of it. So I think my work studying in that kind of background and cohort was also really good because learning from doctors firsthand, you know, how they would manage just an emergency, something which was outside my comfort zone as a physiotherapist, was also really fruitful. I would recommend if anybody wanted to be a sports medicine specialist, I would highly recommend they have at least 3 years of work ex in their bag before they want to think about doing masters, because I just think you'll be able to absorb better. You know, you won't be sitting on the first bench writing down every single word that the teacher is you're going on about, because you would already have had some amount of experience. So you're then just, you know, picking up the important things that you want to know.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, Hiba, about what you said? And what really stays with me is you are literally all about sports, and that's what we stand for. Because of you've shown that you can be a jack of all, even in a field like sports science, and still manage to do everything at once. And like you said, dipping your toes into multiple things is not necessarily a bad thing. You have several certifications as well, as we know, in terms of licenses. You've done trauma as well, certified by the FA Trauma Management, and so on and so forth. So massive advice right there. And I think whoever wants to get into sports medicine, please contact us and we can get you in touch with Hiba. But coming to my next question. So, of course, you've worked with a club. When you joined them, they were in the championship. Just newly promoted into the Prem, also working with West Ham. So what's the typical size of these elite football clubs in terms of their medical staff? And what are the typical specialties that you'd find in terms of the people they hire? And what types of differences have you noticed between, let's say, like an elite football club versus a club which is on the fringe and looking to go up? As you've experienced.
I think our medical team, even at West Ham and Forest, the number has been quite similar. We're a big group. And when I say medical team, that's inclusive of doctors, inclusive paramedics, inclusive of physios, inclusive of sports therapists, SNC coaches, nutritionists, psychologists. Now, if I break it down, if I only talk about physios, at least 10, at least. And sometimes you feel like 10 is also not enough because there is just so much work all the time. So for example, on a training night, you know, you would have at least 2 to 3 physios, you know, present for the training night because there are just so many different pitches to cover. X number of age groups would be playing that night, and there has to be a physio standing ready to run on the pitch. You know, say if there are like 4 different age groups training, then you would want those many physios. But at the same time, while the training is going on, we also have our injury clinics. So you would have maybe like 2 physios in the clinic, you know, treating the persistent injured patients, you know, who've been coming in for rehab quite regularly. But then the physios who are, you know, just pitch side, they're just on call waiting for an injury to take place. There have been so many times where we've been short on staff, like this morning, you know, we had training and we had like the injury clinic happening at the same time. And I went and gave like 1 radio each to every coach that was there. So I was like kind of like standing in the center and I was looking like north, south, east, west. And I was just like, every time the whistle went and I was like, oh my God, like there should be a whistle particularly for an injury because I'm just like twisting my head right, left, you know, and center waiting for an injury to happen. So big medical staff. We typically have meetings once a week where we all come together on a Monday potentially, and we run through all the patients, all the players that we're expected to see in the week who've been coming for, you know, persistent injuries. But then, I mean, there have to be at least 2 to 3 injuries taking place on a regular basis during training. You know, they can either be super traumatic, like a head injury, or they can be something as simple as, I don't know, like a small fracture or, you know, like shin splints or just like muscular cramps. So we all obviously like work in larger MDTs. When it's more traumatic, it's definitely the physios who are the leads. But then when we're progressing towards end stage rehabilitation of a player, say for example, post-op ACL, then the SNCs come into play. You know, the nutritionist comes into play. We've got the club doctor who needs to sign off the player, especially when it's a concussion, you know, those are the worst kind of injuries to have, but also the most common injuries that we see. So when I was at Forest, again, it was like really similar. We were about 10 to 12 physios only. And then there were at least 3-4 SNC coaches, at least 3-4 sports scientists, analysts, nutritionists, doctors, and paramedics. And it's quite similar even at West Ham. I think if you ask any Premier League club, I think the more medical staff, the better. I think the clubs who are maybe Cat 2 or Cat 3 and below is when you would see a dwindle in the size of the medical staff. I have seen during my master's, you know, even when I was like covering placements at the time, we would be working, you know, with a Catch 3 club, and they wouldn't have a physio. So I would cover our game as well as their game. And that would just be something that would be pre-decided. You know, they'd request that, okay, we don't have any cover with medical. Can your physio do it? That's a bit of a tricky situation, actually, because if two players collide, and if you know that they're both going for a header, and you suspected two head injuries to happen, as a healthcare professional, you know, you want to help both of them, but then you are kind of responsible for your club first. Touch wood, I've not really been in that situation, and I think very serious, where I have had to like choose and decide who am I going to address first, but that's a very, very possible thing to happen.
So do you think it just comes down to the fact that the Cat 2 and 3 clubs don't have the money so that they can't hire more? Is that the major reason, or is it because they feel that it's probably less prone to injuries as compared to the other leagues or something like that?
I think it's, I would say one more than the other. So former more than the latter, because when we have like West Ham games, for example, and say, for example, we're playing Arsenal, so like a Premier League game, we're a group of people like just standing, you know, pitch side. So you'll see the sports scientists, you'll see the analysts, you'll see the physio, you'll see the doctor, and there'll be so many different coaches as well. And Arsenal will bring the exact amount of people, if not more. But when we're doing maybe like a Cat 3 or below, they don't come with as many people. So let's forget the physio stuff, just generally. So I think it just comes down to how many people you have in the academy or in the club, mostly.
That's really helpful, Hiba, and sort of going off that as well. So you talked a lot about some of the distinctions in medical staff from, you know, Premier League versus Cat 2 and Cat 3 teams. Can you talk a little bit on the difference in terms of medical amenities, medical facilities, equipment? Because I know sports science is evolving pretty quickly, and it's, I guess, always been evolving pretty fast. What are some of the differences you see between these teams, just with what they have, the resources that they have beyond the staff?
Massive. It's massive. I mean, a club as big as West Ham and even Forest, some of the things that I was introduced to, I did not know existed even in India. And even like during my master's, you know, I had like maybe seen them on presentation sites, but I hadn't used them. So even for someone as experienced as me, and like, mind you, I've like worked in like so many different sports. When I came here, I was like, oh, wow. Like, what is this? What are force decks? So force decks is basically just like these force plates, and you stand on them and you do a squat, and then on the screen there'll be like a 3D image of you, and it'll show you your right leg was, you know, putting in 50% effort, your left leg was showing like 30% effort, etc. But yeah, so that's what I learned here, and obviously that's the perk of working in a Premier League club. I think it's unlikely for a lower level club to have access to things like that. For example, even like the medical amenities, like you said, it was a tournament I did one time. It was a Premier League tournament, and it was futsal. And there were just like, you know, 20-minute tournaments taking place the whole day. And there was one particular club who had come with one physio only. And we were like a group of five physios who were taking breaks, you know, like I'll do two, then somebody else will do two. I'll take a break, then I'll come back after 2 hours, because it's supposed to be like an all day thing. So before every game, you know, we go and like introduce ourselves to the opposite physio. I always say, okay, this is my trauma bag. I've got this with me. You know, what have you got in case, you know, we both have to run the pitch at the same time? So this guy told me he had XYZ. And in my head, I was like, oh, okay. And then I said, don't worry. You know, if you need anything more, I've got like plenty of stuff. And then I asked him, I was like, so who's on pitch number two? You know, who's your colleague? And he just made a joke and he said, madam, I'm a Cat 4 club. What do you expect? So I thought, oh my God, like this is going to be a heavy day. Like I'm not even covering those many games, but it already feels so intense because there was so much happening at the same time. And he had to run from one pitch to the other every time somebody radioed him. So yeah, there definitely is a lot of pressure even in that case, because if you're the only person responsible for so many things, it can get exhausting.
It is kind of nice to hear about the camaraderie amongst medical staff, because I know before a game there's probably intensity between players and coaches and managers, but it's good to know that the medical staff is on the same page. and willing to help out if there's something, you know, we've seen so many scary cases on the pitch, and probably everyone who can help is helpful.
Typically, so, you know, like you see, when you see a player going down, especially if it's a head injury, you need more than two people to help you with it. So what I tell any of the opponent players, physios who've never worked with me, I just say to them, if you see me running on, and if you see me down with the player for more than 10 seconds, don't even wait for me to signal you, just run. Because if a player is down with a neck injury, the way I place my hand and the way I place my body, anything that I do can affect him. So then for me to then turn around, you know, move my hand, call for a signal, that can put the player's neck in, you know, at risk. So I just tell any opponent person that if you see me down for more than 10 seconds, because in my first 10 seconds, I'm trying to establish, is he alive? Is he breathing? Is he conscious? You know, and then if I know he's alive, breathing and conscious, then okay, I'm, you know, a bit at ease. But in the first 10 seconds, if they don't see me making any movement, it means that I need help. And there have been times where I have been lucky enough for people to get that cue, because sometimes, you know, I just like, look, like make a 10-degree move with my neck and like look at the opposite person. I just like, look at them dead in the eye, and they know that, okay, she needs help because it's an emergency, and they run on.
That sounds extremely intense, but I can imagine that's with the number of players you're dealing with, that's probably something that is just a reality of the job. So it's good to know that you have some kind of signal or some kind of message or almost a code sign, like more than 10 seconds, please run on. Which is probably very important.
Normally when I'm running on the pitch and, you know, like if there's like a player in the middle, you know, the most common tendency is, you know, if a player goes down, all the people around him, his, you know, his squad friends, etc., they'll just be concerned, like, what happened? So I start screaming when I'm running, like, get out of my way, just so that they know I'm coming. And I physically use my body, like I'll push someone to get out of my way, because my job is to get to the player.
I think we in general need to get you just on the subway train, just like to get in, like move past through a crowd to get onto onto the train. So that's really helpful, Hiba. Another thing we want to kind of check with you on is, you know, you work with a lot of age groups. Can you talk a little bit about some of the common things that players need to do to recover after games? And maybe if there's some differences that you see across the age groups that you work with.
Yeah. So obviously we actually start seeing MSK injuries like more when they're like 13, 14 and above, because that's when it starts to get a bit more intense in terms of training and just, you know, intensity of the game. Below 13, you're seeing more growing injuries. So, you know, your knee pains, your ankle pains, etc. So we spend a lot of time, like half an hour at least, you know, warming up, doing a gym session, etc. And that's just called activation. So that's still a part of the training, but we're quite careful with injury prevention. So we spend a lot of time with all age groups. You know, we tailor the program for every single age group. If it's like 18s and above, then they're obviously in the gym, like lifting weights and like doing more tactical stuff, analytical stuff, change of direction, etc. If it's younger age groups like 11s or 12s, obviously they don't play at that level, but we still want to make sure that they're warming up really well. So warming up is super important. So that's typically led by SNC, but the physio will always be, you know, around. Sometimes I see the players not doing the deadlift in the right manner. I'll always go and be cheeky and I'll say something like, I can lift more than you, you know? And then, you know, they kind of like take me a bit seriously because they're like, oh my God, she's a girl and, you know, all my mates are around and I want to do well and things. So that's the warming up. And then cooling down is quite similar. So we spend a lot of time in cooling down as well, you know, foam rolling, stretching, etc. But the recovery just doesn't last only on the day of the game. It's the next day as well that matters. So typically, if we've played a game on a Sunday, then we will have Monday as a recovery session, you know, where we will have like gentle work in again before training. It also depends on what kind of game we play on Sunday. If it's like an all-day tournament, then Monday will not be hectic. You know, Monday will be more like analysis and like discussing tactical stuff, etc. Because 13 years and above, you know, once you're a teenager, once you're working at that level, you're just prone to injuries, and especially football. But that's just MSK, you know. Concussion, I have seen a seven-year-old have a concussion. Concussion can happen to anybody. Freak injuries like fractures can happen to anybody. So those are traumatic episodes that are common across the age groups. More musculoskeletal stuff like muscle tears, ligament injuries, ankle sprains, and things like that are a bit more pronounced once you start growing old.
Got it, Hiba. And sorry, just to quickly confirm, could you just confirm what I'm guessing MSK is musculoskeletal. What is SNC? Yeah. Sorry, just to confirm.
Oh, strength and conditioning.
Perfect.
Yeah. Come on, Krishnan. You don't understand sports lingo. This is what it has come to.
I was so far off when she said SNC. I wasn't even putting the and. I had an N over there. So I thought some kind of sports nurse and conference. I had no idea. So I was, no, you're totally good. I should have known this. It was totally my bad, but I just wanted to confirm. But no, that was super helpful. I didn't want to ask. So I think you kind of covered most of this already. Are there some very common injuries that you see across different age groups? I think you covered a lot of it, but even within, say, musculoskeletal, are there very specific things that you see?
Yeah. Concussions, number one. Like, we are grilled and grilled and grilled to get the assessment of concussion, right? Because it is a traumatic injury and it can directly affect your brain, right? So concussion is extremely common to have, but also not so common to pick up. Because the thing is that you ask very specific questions to the players, like, are you feeling dizzy? Do you know where you are? Any headaches, etc. Sometimes if a player is desperate to get back into the game or doesn't want to stay out for a couple of weeks, it is possible that he can just come and tell you, I'm fine. And then what do? You just have to rely on what they say. Obviously, you are assessing them, but subjectively, if they come and tell you, no, I'm fine, I don't have a headache, I'm okay, what do you do? So it's quite important to, you know, be on high alert at all times when you see a neck injury or a head injury. Just assume that, you know, you have to clear them for concussion unless you think that they're totally okay. So concussion is definitely number one. And then we see a lot of like hips, knees, and ankles. So knees and ankles most commonly because of change of direction and, you know, tackles and landing and twisting and turning. I think I would say ligament injuries, so ACL, obviously. Managing ACL cases is my bread and butter. So ACL cases are the most common cases that you see across football. And then ankle would be a strong second in musculoskeletal, just the way how you kick the ball or, you know, how you get tackled or how you twist and turn and land.
Hiba, I've got this finger. You have to check that. And I have my metatarsal as well. It's a bit swollen. I think it's the bone. I've done my bone in a bit, but I'll send you a picture and you need to help me out at least.
I see a bit more complex cases, Madhav.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So it's as long as I can walk, I think I'm okay, but I just probably need some genuine medical advice on it.
Hey, but charge in the most expensive UK medical rate you can. Make sure for every minute.
but just to move on, this one is around, like, we've seen this happen in the past. I'm going to use an example, Jose Mourinho and I forgot the name of the academy doctor. Who was it? I can't remember her name. It's not coming to mind. But basically, there was a problem because she didn't clear a player and Mourinho lost it. And then they had an argument and then, you know, things went down south. How does the medical staff typically deal with the pressures that they may face in terms of getting players ready? Or players, like you said, right? Players want to play and then they lie about certain things and then they... and after a point, it's their will against your advice. So how do you deal with such sort of pressures and problems typically?
Yeah, I think you have to believe me if I tell you that every time I'm at work, my anxiety levels are high. Because at any given point in time, there can be the smallest or the biggest injury, you know. And as much as I love watching football, you know, every time that the game's taking place, I'm like ready in my head. I'm just like, it's going to happen. Like, you're always on high alert. Sometimes, like, my friends make a joke and they're like, oh, there were no injuries today, so you didn't really work today. And I'm like, but that's not true. Even though there was no injury today, I was still, like, watching like a hawk. In fact, that limits my ability to enjoy the game because every time a player makes a violent pass, either thinking, oh my God, that's going to be a goal. I'm like, oh my God, his knee is going to go. The pressure When I worked at Nottingham Forest, and I think because I was so new to working in that kind of environment, and bear in mind, there are very few female physios. I think the pressure is just different when you're a woman in that male-dominant world. And I found it took me a while to be assertive in the way how I want to, put my point across. So there were a few occasions in the last 4 years where I thought that the player absolutely needed to come off the pitch. He was in pain. He was a trialist and he had ended up with a quad tear, so his quadricep muscle. I could see it. He was a goalkeeper and he was trialing out. And I think it was a very important game for him too. But he kind of got knocked in his quad. And I could see that he was in pain and, suddenly his performance had dropped. But that day, for that particular game, we did not have another goalkeeper. So this trialist was the only goalkeeper we had. Typically, we have subs. So we could have, took him out. And I said to the coach, I said, he needs to come off. And the coach said, oh, but the ref hasn't called you. And that's the problem with football, right? You have to wait for the ref. And the coach said that the ref hasn't called you. And in my head, I was like, but I can tell he's in pain. And the coach said, we don't have a sub. So you're just going to have to let him play to whenever he can. And obviously, as a healthcare professional, that's my job, to make sure my player's okay. But then there's also that empathetic side that overtakes. And I waited for 5 minutes and I was just walking back and forth and getting really restless because I could tell that every time the opponents were not attacking and they were in the defense, he was just going into a bit more relaxed mode. So I knew that he was in pain. And then I waited for 5 minutes and I just walked to the coach and I said, no, I'm not waiting for the ref. I'm pulling him out. You can take any of these players here and sub them. And I said, you should have been better prepared. And I think that was an early-ish kind of game in my career. And I think I felt good in standing up. But then I also learned that actually I can be assertive because my little job here is my player. I'm answerable to the player and not the club. And I think everybody after that started taking a bit more seriously. So definitely the pressures are quite high. For example, there's a game tomorrow and the player's injured today. And sometimes the coach will come and ask you, can he play for 20 minutes? And in my head, I'm like, but what will you achieve in 20 minutes? He's still going to be in pain. He's not going to do his best. He's not going to perform the way he normally would. And you may not even get the best out of him. So what is the purpose of making him play just for 20 minutes? Now, if I know that a player is okay, yes, he's injured, but he can play 50% capacity. I typically tell the coaches, can we break it down? Can he play first 10, 15 minutes, have a breather, and then come back and play 10, 15 minutes towards the end of the game? So it's a win-win. Okay, that's something that I'm flexible with. But if it's an absolute, if it's an injury that requires rest, then it requires rest. There's no two ways about it. But again, these are things that I have had to learn over the years, to be able to communicate and to be able to be assertive because it's a very high intense environment. When I run the pitch, I only get 2 minutes to figure out what's going on. Most of the times, the player's in pain, so you can't even get all the history out. I run on and he'd say, my ankle. But I'm like, but what for your ankle? Did you twist it inwards? Did you twist it outwards? Did you get tackled? What happened? And sometimes it's hard to even see because there's so many people going on. So you can be standing pitch side, but you can't visibly see the contact that was made. So I get 2 minutes to decide, can this player get up and play? Or do I need to extricate him and, do a bigger assessment pitch side? And I just honestly, I take it game by game. The pressure is the same every single time, regardless of me working with pre-academy or working with the highest age group. It's exactly the same.
Sounds too intense and it's super stressful. I would start disliking the sport in a lot of ways. Yeah. If I were in your place, I don't mean to obviously say that. I know it's hard enough, Hiba, and you are super passionate and love football, but mentally, when you're just saying this, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed by it. Yeah. Because we've all been through that, being on the other side and experiencing this pain and just waving it off and then wanting to play continuously. So it's pretty intense. Okay, so Hiba, now my last question, and then Rishabh, whatever questions he has, we can go ahead with that. So tell us, you started this new page, the Sports Med Physio, it's called. Yeah. Tell us a bit about that and what are you trying to basically achieve with your page and what are you trying to do? Happy to share that.
So I don't want to put out content like five exercises for back pain, because there just are no five exercises for back pain, right? So I'm actually going to target my page towards clinicians rather than just normal people, because there are so many pages that are just targeted towards normal people, right? I want to target it more towards clinician because I actually like to teach. You know, it's a part of my role at my full-time job and even like other jobs I've done, like leading like clinical sessions, etc. And that's something I realized about myself while I was doing masters, that I love doing presentations and like I love like teaching in class, etc. So I thought that I have all this knowledge to share, and I must like try and make like a social media presence to be able to kind of, you know, give out that knowledge. So I'm going to be touching on soft skills, like how you communicate with a patient, you know, what's your perception of pain, what pain really is, you know, like things like that. Because one of my specialties is also like seeing patients with chronic pain, which is very different from what I do in football, because football is more like acute and traumatic. But chronic pain is more, you know, which has been persistent for a really long time. And if that starts affecting a patient's mental health and like the n number of like psychological factors in it. So I think I want to try and target my posts towards basically just breaking down those things for clinicians so that they can use those tips in their sessions while treating patients. So if you saw, I don't know if you saw my first post, I put up something about less is more. You know how everybody thinks that if I do more exercises in the week, or if I get like two soft tissue massages done in a week, you know, I'll be fine, like things will be better. But as I have worked in different sports now, I've learned actually, no, sometimes less is more, you know. If you've done three sessions of rehab in the week, I'm happy with it. Your muscle's not going to grow overnight. You have to give it time. So less is more. And this is something that I tell my patients as well, especially the super enthusiastic ones, you know, who are on pro level and they want to do something all the time, you know, they're injured. If they've injured the knee, they still want to do like get on the bike or do the cross trainer or do the upper body stuff, etc. So I use that phrase. I say sometimes less is more. You know, you need a recovery day today so that you can smash out your knee rehab on like the day after. So yeah, that's what I'm hoping to target with my page. I'm going to take it slow. Like there's no rush. I'm probably going to roll something out like once a week or once every 10 days because I want to curate something that's actually helpful for people and more research-based stuff rather than just my opinion. Like, this is my opinion. I don't want to do that. I want to actually give like hard facts so that people know where it's coming from.
That's really helpful. And it's good that you have a kind of unique target audience so that it can be more specific. Yeah. Like you said, you know, it can be more, you can probably talk more in high level language on more complex issues, even when you're talking from a soft skills perspective. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense, Hiba. We do want to cover just a little bit about, you know, just your love for football. Where did the interest come specifically and love for coming, wanting to work specifically in football? B, you obviously have a great seat in the house for even, you know, during training days, watching across fields. But like Mas said, it's kind of like a high anxiety situation because it's not like an enjoyable, relaxed with a beer sitting and watching a game. You're intensely viewing for injuries and anxiety. Has that altered your viewing of the sport, your love for the sport? Given you mean, I'm guessing even casually when you watch, I would think you kind of have that at the back of your mind.
Yeah. So my father played football at a very high level. So when I was younger, I was just like told so many stories of his football days. And that's where I picked it up, really. It's a shame that I don't play football, but my younger sister also played football at a very high level. So I think when we were growing up, you know, him and her like got along so well because they would have like this football talk and like, you know, he would go for training sessions, etc. So I think I felt like a bit left out sometimes. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go and get football physio. I'm just joking. But definitely it was definitely like his influence as to why I like football, because obviously in India, cricket is like the sport to play. But when I moved to the UK, obviously, like, there were different options, you know. When I was doing my master's, I did rugby, etc. as well. But I just thought that football made more sense because, you know, it's if you get into football, you have, you know, you have access to Premier League. You know, you can go all the way up to the Football Association. And it's just a sport that I liked to watch. I understood it, you know. So it never felt like, oh my God, I need to go and learn something new now. When I was covering for rugby, I still don't know rules of rugby. So when I would stand and watch, I would just be like, oh my God, like what's happening now? Is that a foul? Is that not a foul? I didn't really understand the principles of the sport. So when I would have my placements for rugby, I would sell my soul to my classmates that, please, can you cover my rugby placements? I will cover whatever you want, whatever you are doing. If it's fencing, I'll go and cover fencing. Just do rugby for me. So definitely that's how picking a career in football was easy. But as you very rightly said, sometimes, you know, my flatmates are sitting and like they're watching a game and I've just come back from West Ham. And they'd be like, do you want to sit down and watch the game? And I'll just be like, no. Because I just won't be able to enjoy it. You know, like there were times where we're watching a game on the telly and I'm screaming like, oh my God, that's going to be an injury. That's going to be an injury. And they just look at me and they're just like, can you switch off? And I'm just like, no, I can't. Because you're so drilled into it. Like that's just so reflexive. So definitely in a way, I feel like I can't watch games back to back. Or, you know, like I have to like really talk myself out that you don't need to analyze what's happening on the TV. Just relax, just watch, you know. So many times when like we're watching a game and like I see the physio running on, like I make a comment. I just feel like she could have ran faster, you know, like what is she doing? Like why are they taking so long to assess, you know, where are the paramedics and things like that. But obviously like I'm just blabbering and my flatmates will just look at me and be like, you just can't watch. You just can't watch like quietly like normal people.
Hiba, it's so funny you mentioned that because I recently watched, actually it was the Champions League final, but I was watching with someone who's a ref and he's a referee for university games. And the entire game, rather than judging the play or what was happening, he was just judging the referee's decisions. Everything was just, and it wasn't like he was angry towards, you know, favoring one team. Like, you know, like I'm an Arsenal fan, I'd be mad if they make decisions against Arsenal. Yeah. He was just critiquing every decision the referee made rather than the game. Yeah. So I saw that firsthand for refereeing. So I can imagine you for, you know, medical staff decisions.
I think because so when you want to be a football physio, you have to do the trauma course that I did from the FA. So if you're a Premier League physio, you have to do that course. And that was the most intense exam I have given in my life, because they are, your assessors are like physios and doctors with the FA for the England team, like they're top people. And obviously like you have like the theory, etc., but the practical sessions, the scenarios that they give are very, very, very realistic. And I don't think I could ever get over that stress that I was in, you know, when I was doing those. So anytime I see even the smallest injury, like this, the most minor, most injury, I just feel like, no, like I have to deal with this like it's major. Because when we were getting trained, we were told that you have to deal with this like it is significant, because you actually don't know how it's going to turn. So one of my scenarios that I had when I was undergoing my exam, my player came down with a hip fracture. And when they kind of like, you know, read out the scenario to me, I was like, okay, I know what the hip fracture is, like the femur fracture, this is what I'm going to do, blah, blah, blah. So I started like displaying my skills. And then they changed the scenario. They changed it. They were like, okay, now your player is going into, you know, a cardiovascular arrest. What are you going to do now? And in my head, I was like, what? In my head, I was like, why did they do that? And then I was frazzled. I started panicking. And I was like, oh my God. So I was like trying to manage his pelvis fracture and I'm not even like halfway through. And now they'll change the scenario. And I managed to do it somehow. And in the end, they said, do you think your real life cases are going to be straightforward? No. And it's very important, because those 2 days, you ask any medical person who's done those, they will come out telling you like they were the most intense days of your life, because it's just simulation. You know, there's a dummy who's talking to you and is saying, my pulse is weak or I'm dying, and you have to keep doing CPR till you resuscitate them. And then it's so, so, so realistic. But I think it's so intense because it's so realistic.
No, I we can completely understand. I mean, we can understand, but we can't empathize because we just have not been in the same situation.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
I can't even imagine how intense it is. And the stakes, very frankly, are so high. We saw with, you know, we saw Christian. Yeah, with Ericsson's case, how horrifying that was. We've seen many cases, Fabrice Muamba.
Yeah.
The stakes are higher than usual in a, you know, a casual watching of a game. So it's incredible what you do. And I can't even really imagine the intensity, to be very honest with you, but it's obviously incredible. Last question, Hiba, we have for you before you go into a slightly more fun segment. We wanted to ask you a little bit about the differences between working in India versus UK. Just some of the differences and opportunities that are available, maybe even from a, you know, which sports you have access to. And then even from like a diversity and inclusions perspective, where you see, you know, more opportunities for women, not necessarily where you see more, but where you see, even within what fields you see more opportunities for women versus, you know, maybe not.
When I was in India, this was like 1 year before I decided to do my master's. Like I said, like I had worked in upper limb sports, so like cricket, racket sports, swimming, etc. But I really wanted to try a little bit of like football before I moved to the UK. And, you know, ISL was quite big at the time. Like, you know, it had gathered a lot of engagement and attraction, etc. I knew a few people in a few different clubs in the ISL. And they said that, you know, like we're hiring physios. So I applied at a few clubs. They all interviewed me. They would all tell me, you're a great candidate, etc. And then I would get a call back or like an email in a couple of days saying, sorry, we can't hire you. Some of them didn't really give me a reason, but there was one club I spoke to, and it was actually a very heated discussion as well. And they were like, we can't hire you because this is a men's team and you're a woman physio. And I said, so? So they were like, no, you know, you'll have to like live in the dormitory with the men's team and it might just be too much. And I was like, too much for who? Not for me, because I want to come there. You know, I'm happy to like sleep in a room without no AC, and I'm happy to like wake up at 5 a.m. because I really like football and I want to work in football. And they were like, no, madam, it's not uncomfortable for you. It'll be uncomfortable for our players. And I think that's what really pushed me over the edge, because I wanted to work in football regardless of the gender, you know. And ISL at the time only had a men's team. It didn't have a female equivalent. And then when I started thinking about like the female tournaments, they would only take place like once in the entire year for a month. So 1 month in the entire year, like that's not good enough for me. You know, I wanted to work 12 months of the entire year. So that definitely was frustrating, because I even went to the extent and I said to that person, I said, who is the candidate, you know, you've hired? I said, I can guarantee you right now, my CV is better than him. I did not even know who the candidate was, but I just knew that I had put in so much effort. My interview was so good. And like the questions that I'd asked and had answered. And I was just like, I just couldn't figure out why me being a female physio would be so difficult. So that's where I decided, I was like, no, I want to move out, because sports is what I want to do. And I don't only want to be stuck to like settling for something small, you know, like working once a year for like 1 week or 1 month and like just not being happy with my role. So I think that in terms of opportunities for women, I'm so happy that I'm getting to do what I'm getting to do, because it's equal. You know, I do not see that imbalance in the clinics and the clubs that I worked at over here. You're treated with so much respect, you know. And everything is just, you just feel like you're on par. Sometimes I feel like, oh, actually, I have more of an edge because, you know, I've had all this experience, etc. And I'm a female physio. And that actually helps me sometimes talking to players, especially teenagers. My coaches and my managers have told me that, okay, this is a sensitive issue. This player's not listening to us. Can you go and talk to him? He will understand if it's coming from a female. So actually now I feel like 4 years down the line, that was a problem. You know, that was a weakness in a way, it was a barrier. But now I feel like actually it's a strength for me. Like it's a niche, because I'm a female in a male dominated world. And there are certain things that might only be better delivered by me. And it just gives me like so immense happiness and satisfaction. So definitely like for females, like, it's a great opportunity here. But in terms of, like, the practice, the medicine, when I first moved here, like, the first week or the first month was a massive shock to my system in just the way how assessing a patient and managing a patient was. I kept being told that the medicine is the same, the practice is different, but I would beg to differ. I feel like for an immigrant, everything is different. Over here, people talk in using a lot of phrases and idioms, you know. We were doing like a traumatic assessment and my consultant said, this symptom is a red herring. And my head, I was like, what does she mean red herring? Like, you know, is she talking about the fish? Like, have I not asked like this patient something in the history? Like, have I missed something else? So it took me a long time to understand the banter, the language, you know, the way that that's put into the medical aspect. So in the first month, you know, my friends, my colleagues who were more like British locals, etc., I felt like I had to work so much harder just to be on par with them because they already knew the basics. They've lived in the UK. They knew how the system worked. They knew what the examiner wanted, what the examiner was looking for, as opposed to me, where I spent my entire education in the Indian system, which was so different. So the assessment, the examination, talking to a patient, you know, you don't use words like madam and sir here. You just address someone with their first name. And that was so weird for me because back in India, even your patient, you address as madam and sir. Even your professor, you address as madam and sir. So definitely, I think learning the language, it's still English, but like learning that difference in the language was a big culture shock to my system, definitely.
So Hiba, in the last close to an hour, you have covered something and really opened both of our eyes. And I'm sure whoever tunes into this will also be extremely appreciative of all that you've shared. And to see so much at such a young age, I'm not going to disclose your age on the podcast, of course, but it's incredible to have done what you have done already. And, you know, all the best to you going forward as well. Now, we've gone through too much of talk around traumas and concussions and negative aspects. Yeah. So we'll just move on to something that we love to do with all our guests. It's the rapid fire.
Oh my God, where's my coffee?
No, we don't follow Karan Johar rules.
No hamper also, by the way.
There's
sorry.
No hamper as well. But so I'll start off and then Rishabh will also pitch in as and when. So the first one is, obviously, we're going to take out West Ham from the equation. Pick your favorite London club, obviously removing West Ham, and then pick your least favorite.
God, I can't do this.
You have to do this, and you just, no reasons. We're not going to ask you for reasons. Just tell us the clubs. So favorite and least favorite.
Chelsea favorite. And least favorite. I don't have a least favorite.
Come on, Hiba, you have to give us a name. You have to give us a name. I want one. And I'm hoping you pick that one.
Okay, I'll tell you why. Least favorite because it just takes forever to travel and get there. Arsenal.
Yes.
only because it takes forever to travel and get there.
Highbury and Islington is quite far, to be fair. So, anyway,
that was the perfect answer from us. This podcast is split between two United fans and two Arsenal fans. So, any opportunity to crap on either of the teams is always jumped on.
What's funny is that was Rishabh's question, and it ended up backfiring. So, unfortunately. Anyway, so before moving to the UK, which club did you support?
Chelsea, because it was a very like family, kind of, my entire family supports Chelsea. Yeah.
Fair enough. And I know this answer, but I'm going to ask you this anyway. Are you a beach person or a hill station person?
Beach.
I knew that exactly, sir. Yeah. This is more so for everyone else. Anyway, Tristan.
Okay. Hiba, favorite sport to watch outside of football?
Cricket, absolutely. I mean, am I even Indian if I don't watch and like cricket?
This was a citizenship test. I don't know if you knew that. Yes. That's what this is.
I don't have a British citizen yet, so I still have to play to my roots.
I mean, cricket's pretty well rooted in Britain UK. As well, so you're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Childhood dream profession.
I always wanted to be in medicine. Always. I was eight when I decided I wanted to do medicine. So.
Fantastic. Well done, Hiba. I will say my childhood dream was also medicine and I completely veered off that track. So well done. Well done. Favorite superhero?
Harley Quinn. I love Harley Quinn. I also dressed up as Harley Quinn one. Yeah.
that's an answer I'd never expected, but it's cool. It's
awesome. A good answer. It's a unique answer for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Your biggest pet peeve?
Oh, there's so many. I have so many OCDs about so many things in life. Oh my God. I guess like when people like make a lot of sound when they're chewing. Oh yeah. I can't tolerate it.
That's a fair one. That really bothers me too. Like, especially with the mouth open. Admittedly, I do it sometimes, God, yeah. But when I see it in other people, I think it really bothers me too.
Yeah.
Okay. Last one for me. Favorite cuisine.
I literally had Chinese last night and like this afternoon. That's my like guilty pleasure. So I would say Chinese is comfort food.
One thing that you cannot travel without?
A book.
And last question to wrap this up, your favorite sports person of all time?
Mark Noble.
Wow, Mr. West Ham. What an answer.
Good answer.
Hiba's hitting all the right notes today. But Hiba, thank you so much for joining. It's been an absolute and immense pleasure to have you. For all those who tuned in, you know the drill. Like, share, subscribe, comment. We'll put Hiba's link of her page in the description as well. Check that out. Please do give her a follow as well. Reach out to us if you want us to cover any other episodes in sports. We keep bringing on guests with different stories and across different domains. Stay tuned for a lot more guest episodes coming. Till then, take care, stay safe, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
If you like this episode, make sure to leave a like and share it with anyone else who might be interested. You can also subscribe on any social media platform that you prefer, and all our links are in the bio. We also have a website with all our episodes as well as blogs and a whole lot of other sports content, so make sure to check that out as well.